You're listening to a podcast from Stanford Center on Poverty and Inequality. I'm Diantha Parker. The sequester budget cuts that came into effect in March have largely spared the so-called safety net, government programs designed to temporarily boost the incomes of struggling Americans. Economist Hillary Hoynes argues that these safety net programs should remain intact because there's growing evidence they have long-term positive effects. Hoynes is a professor at the University of California, Davis, and Berkeley, and she's also co-editor of the American Economic Review. She's been studying food stamps, now called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, and the Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC. Her work shows that both programs help grow a family's income over a period of years so that eventually recipients can earn a larger salary without the help of the safety net. For this reason, Hoynes describes these programs as essentially short-term financial benefits with long-term effects. The EITC was designed as an annual income supplement. You have to be working to qualify. The typical recipient is a single mother with two children who makes $12,000 to $18,000 a year. That salary translates to an annual earned income credit of about $4,000, which she receives after she files her taxes. Hoyne says that boost from the IRS can work out to nearly a third of that family's earnings.
Individuals who earn more, say a working low-income mother who maybe earns in the $25,000 range, she would get a much smaller credit, maybe on the order of about $1,500, $2,000. So as your earnings increase, the amount of the credit is phased out. And that when individuals earn upwards of the high $30,000 range, then they're no longer eligible for any credit.
The idea is that this additional income makes low-wage work viable by providing working families with enough to get by. Also, benefits taper off slowly as income increases, so there remains a strong incentive to secure that extra income. Hoynes sees this combination of incentive and aid as a very important characteristic of the credit.
We can attribute higher employment rates among the disadvantaged population, primarily single mothers with children, precisely to this increased aid through the EITC.
This finding is an important starting point for another aspect of Hoynes and others' research, how this increased income may, over time, counteract some of the long-term effects that poverty can have on individuals and their kids. One of Hoynes' students at UC Davis, Ankur Patel, studied the Earned Income Tax Credit's effects over a several-year period, looking at what families do with this additional income.
And what he found was that a large share of the increased income goes to essentially supporting work, additional transportation costs, some additional expenses around childcare, additional spending on food, which we would expect with more income in the household, although no additional spending on perhaps things that are not as, quote, good, such as smoking and alcohol.
Hoynes says Patel also found the money frequently went toward better housing and sometimes a car. This overall improvement in a family's circumstances led Hoynes and her colleagues to ask more long-ranging questions, specifically how extra money from the safety net programs can, after a few years, begin to affect people's physical health along with their economic well-being. There's already a body of research showing that people who make more money are healthier. They live longer and are less likely to be obese or have heart disease or diabetes.
But it's been very difficult to learn how much of those differences across groups are due to income per se or due to many other things that are correlated with income, like environment, stress, housing factors, local neighborhoods, job conditions, and so on.
As a starting point, Hoynes looked at both medical and economics research that shows birth weight to be a marker of lifetime health. A child considered low weight at birth weighs 2,500 grams or less. That's just over 5.5 pounds. Hoynes also says children born at that weight are also more likely to be born into a family that qualifies for the safety net programs. He or she can grow up to be perfectly healthy, but begins life with a series of risks.
We know from other studies that individuals who were born with low birth weight are more likely to have heart disease, to be obese in adulthood, less likely to have higher levels of schooling and higher levels of earnings.
Hoynes has found that the safety net programs seem to help children even before they're born.
Expectant mothers who are exposed to a policy environment where they have additional income coming into the family show dramatic improvements in their child's birth weight.
Hoynes has also looked at how, after babies are born, the food stamp program, or SNAP, alone can help them become healthier kids.
Especially for those years leading up to from birth to age 5, which we know from the developmental biology literature is this critical period of time, the cognitive development, as well as this physiological development for the children, that when they're exposed to the SNAP program, they're less likely to be obese in adulthood. They're less likely to have been diagnosed with high blood pressure.
Hoynes concludes that while the safety net programs are helping families financially, they're also contributing to a generation of healthier babies and children who have a chance at becoming healthier adults. They may even have a chance of being healthier than their parents, given the rates of the illnesses she's just cited among poorer families today. Still, Hoynes cautions there is much more to learn. We know more about the food stamp program's effects because we've got data from back when it started in the 1960s. But we don't know as much yet about the long-term effects of the earned income tax credit, which is new by comparison. The EITC was among a raft of federal tax reforms of 1996, and the first children whose families received it are turning 17 this year. So not enough time has passed to study its influence.
We're getting to the point where, with the right data, we can evaluate more comprehensively what's going on for the children of EITC recipient families. With the right data, we should be able to say something more about their completed schooling, as well as their sort of entry into the labor market.
Hoynes says there's also been a lot of attention paid to food stamp benefits during the recent so-called Great Recession. This most recent recession lasted between 2008 and 2010, though we're still feeling its effects. In 2011, just over 46 million Americans were receiving SNAP assistance. That's almost double the number who were on food stamps just before the recession began in 2007, according to figures from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Some economists and lawmakers have criticized this expansion, but Hoynes calls their objections short-sighted. She says the safety net programs have provided important cushioning for millions of families during the Great Recession, and that both programs are continuing to do so for the many Americans who haven't felt the effects of the slow recovery some people are experiencing now. She's certain that the current mainstays of the safety net, the earned income tax credit and food stamps, are, in their present forms, doing what they were intended to do, and that their benefits are, and could be, much more long-ranging than their creators knew. You've been listening to a podcast from Stanford Center on Poverty and Inequality. This episode was produced in partnership with the Center for Poverty Research at the University of California, Davis. The editors of this podcast series are Michelle Poulin and Charles Varner. And I'm Diantha Parker. Thanks for listening, and please tune in next time.